Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Chat with the Labs conference call. Today's call is being recorded. You should have received charts for today's conference. If you did not receive them, you may go to www.ibm.com/informix/webcast. Again, that is www.ibm.com/informix/webcast. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Jerry Kazee, Director, IBM Informix Database Development. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to July's Chat with the Lab. So I will admit that a couple seconds ago, I was getting ready to welcome you to August's Chat with the Lab, and I was wondering where the summer had gone, and I realized I just had my calendar on the wrong month. So I've verified with myself it's July. And at least here in Lenexa, we're in the middle of a very hot summer. So I'm glad to be here in the lab where it's nice and cool, and we're focusing on a lot of new features for our upcoming release. Today we'll focus on Informix and IDS. And specifically, we'll talk about IDS in a SOA environment. And I'm really pleased with the speaker that we have today. His name is Alexander Kerner. He's responsible for channel technical sales in based in Germany. But beyond that, Alexander's a certified IT, senior IT specialist, and has been a long time supporter and active developer and of the Informix technology, the IDS technology, as well as EGL, as a someone who runs the lab for Informix. It's always a pleasure to have the opportunity to work with people like Alexander, who bring a lot of practical experience as well as expertise to the team, and give us valuable feedback in terms of product direction. That's important to you because Alexander's out amongst partners and customers every day. It's his experience that helps to ensure that the capability that we deliver in versions of IDS and other products will actually meet your needs. So Alexander is a very valuable and important person for the Informix business and for your businesses as well. Again, today, Alexander will be focused on an overview of SOA, we'll go into a number of details of how IDS supports an SOA environment today, and he'll go into a significant amount of detail on that. I appreciate you dialing in for this. I think this is a very important and timely topic, and looking forward to your feedback on the session as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Alexander.
Okay, so good morning, and also welcome to Chat with the Lab, July's Chat with the Lab. And welcome also from Munich, Germany. By the way, we have temperatures in the high 90s for the Europeans, and the other ones in the higher 30s degrees of Celsius. So thanks a lot, Jerry, for this introduction. And I'm feeling honored to take part of this Chat with the Lab event. And let's go started because we don't have too much time left, and I'm trying to cover as much as possible today. So for those of you currently sitting in front of the slides, I'm currently on the title slide. Actually, there's an image of myself on this title slide looking into the California sun, at this time working on the Red Book project, by the way, in the Bay Area. So we're talking about Informix and SOA integration. And you might have heard lots of stories around SOA, and SOA is definitely one of the focus topics these days right now, not just for IBM, I think for most IT companies around the world. And I just want to show you what you can actually do to integrate specifically Informix IDS into an SOA environment and what kind of technologies are available. So I'm Now switching over to slide number 2, which is the agenda slide. So the brief agenda for today is I'm actually introducing briefly service-oriented architectures. What are service-oriented architectures? I'm trying to keep it as compact as possible here. Then I'm going to give you a high-level view, so to speak, a bird's view of how Informix and SOA integrate. And since most of you are expecting also a more technical session, I'm zooming into much more technical details in the third part, which is actually going to be the longer part of the presentation today. And eventually I'm going to summarize the topic, and actually after my presentation and after some kind of survey questions, we'll have the chance actually, or I offer you the chance to answer some questions which might be coming up throughout the call. So I'm now switching over to slide number 3. So what actually is a service-oriented architecture, or SOA, or how actually can it help you, or can it help your business? First of all, it's an architectural style which actually allows web services-based applications to interoperate dynamically with one another. And specifically, an SOA architecture definitely can help to hide very complex IT environments, specifically in heterogeneous environments, and also makes it easy to combine existing environments, legacy environments, modern environments, and to build up some new, more complex, more powerful, more dynamic applications to really react on dynamic influences from the outside, from the business, from the economy, whatsoever, to be able to quickly react on demand, so to speak, to any kind of influences, effects from the outside world to your own business, actually. And also, even so, SOA is really hyped during those days right now. It's nothing really new. SOA has been around, and the technologies have been around for a long time. Even one of the key or core technologies like web services have been around for a very long time. And I do remember that I have been speaking about integrating Informix with web services in the early 2000s at conferences like XML1, for example. At this point in time, the XML topic has been more hyped. In the meantime, everything got more stabilized and established. So it really comes down that also SOA these days makes it much less expensive for existing companies to actually link their business processes to those of their suppliers to really build up some very powerful supply chains, for example, and other business partners. That's in a nutshell, so to speak, what's behind an SOA or behind a service-oriented architecture. So I'm switching over to slide number 4 now. To make it easier for you, I'm also introducing a simple example, actually, where and how SOA actually these days can be used and will be used and has been used for a long time already. And here I'm having this kind of example about an internet bookstore. It could be any one of the existing known internet bookstores in the world, or any kind of internet retail business, for example. From a customer point of view, you're normally logging in, you're identifying yourself, and you normally would like, in this case, to order, for example, some certain goods, a book in our case. So from your perspective, from a customer perspective, you're just logging in, you're browsing, you're searching for a book, you're ordering the book, it's being delivered to your house. But behind the scenes, normally those processes are a little more complex, and many of those processes and functions are actually being realized by services and are really orchestrated by services in a service-oriented architecture environment. So what normally happens in this case? Let's look behind the scenes. In the first step, your identity must be authenticated. So if you register the first time, also typically those kind of stores are validating your address. And the address validation in many countries are provided by other companies, like, for example, in Germany, I know that the German Telecom or the German Post Service is offering such a service because they're collecting many, many of addresses. So they're offering services and service interfaces, commercial interfaces, to actually do a validation. And I think many of those internet stores are using those kind of facilities. In the next step, if you're placing an order, definitely your charge card, your credit card or debit card needs to be validated somehow. So again, there might be some other companies who are providing external services, like, for example, a bank is providing such a service, or a credit card company, to validate the credit card number and to make sure everything is okay. But again, the company, the internet bookstore in our case, is not providing the service by themselves because they don't have those information. Eventually, after placing an order, your order hopefully should be acknowledged by email. This is then likely provided by an internal email system by the bookstore itself. In many cases, the product is not being in stock. It's normally being delivered on time, so to speak, by a warehouse, by another distributor. So again, the order needs to be sent to a different third party, to a business partner. Again, there's an interface here behind the scenes using services, APIs very likely, to actually place an order, maybe using EDI maybe or XML messages. Eventually, the box is located in the warehouse and being put into a shipping box and then being sent over for shipping. And again, I haven't seen any delivery truck driving around, for example, as an example, having something like Amazon.com on the site. You normally would see DHL, FedEx, or what UPS, or whatsoever. So in this case, again, the third party is being used for sending around the products. And again, this is being, they're using internal service APIs and web services very likely to actually initiate this kind of delivery process. Eventually, your delivery truck is stopping in front of your house and handing over you the box with the box book. And eventually, you need to sign off the delivery. And the sign-off is being sent back to the internet bookstore as a proof that it has been delivered to your home. Again, this is actually also considered another step in this whole environment, and it's considered a service which is being used. So you might get the feeling or the glimpse how you can use different, I would call them Lego bricks, offered by different vendors actually, and put them together into a more powerful Lego, so to speak, scenario, complex brick, which eventually makes up your whole application. And you can also notice and feel, I think, that as soon as the market is reacting, maybe books are maybe not as interesting anymore, maybe people would like to buy or download more, let's say, videos or DVDs on demand, and they might have to rearrange their connections to other business partners to be able to do this very quickly, and therefore those open APIs definitely can help. So again, as I said, in this environment, how does actually SLA comes into play? Each of the applications, those steps described above on the slide number 4, performs a service that is orchestrated more and more increasingly within an SLA architecture or infrastructure. Sorry. So let's switch over to slide number 5. You might have heard lots about web services. And web services are definitely not the only technologies in an SOA environment, but definitely one of the important ones and one of the very well-established ones. So what actually is a web service, as a quick introduction? I would call them simply remote function calls using the intranet and by sending around XML formatted messages. In this case, they're utilizing internet protocols like HTTP or other similar protocols, because this is kind of important because it allows the web service access even across proxies or firewalls. And by the way, they also secure protocols to allow secure web service at the same time. Web services are definitely base technologies, could be seen as foundation technologies for more complex applications. And there are many, many reasons why web services these days, specifically on SLA background, are very successful. They definitely allow loosely coupled systems, so those systems don't need to know each other, basically, and they can be realized in any kind of programming language, programming environment, what you like, actually. So it could be something like a Java environment, Informix 4GL for sure, embedded SSC, COBOL, and so whatsoever it is. And since web services are based on pretty much open standards, which have been around for a long time, it's easy to actually integrate applications because everybody has easy access to those standards. And it's also, by the way, kind of important for those developing countries and third world countries because they also have open access to those standards to be integrated into supply chains. Unlike EDI, for example, which is more proprietary format or has been for a long time. So those kind of standards can also help maybe to increase business with developing countries these days. So let's switch to slide number 6. So why SOA now? I would say basically because the technology has been established in the meantime, all the initial problems that there might have been some initially have been shaken out, and it's more and more adopted by the industry right now. So also in the meantime, there have been some best practices developed to more effectively use web services and service-oriented architecture, and all the required software is now available, including, for example, IDS, like IDF 10 as a core foundation on the data services side. Which brings me to slide number 7. And this is a slide, if you're actually in presentation mode, actually is an animated slide. So you might have to push 2 or 3 times the next button actually to see the full slide, which quickly brings me to one of the standard slides from IBM Software Group right now to actually demonstrate where IDF, specifically IDF 10, but also the other Informix products actually fit into the whole information management portfolio. And in this case, we now basically call all the database servers like Informix, like DB2, like CloudScape, IMS, and so on, data services, because they're able to provide services within a more complex service-oriented architecture. And you see down there on the slide, Informix on the same level like all the other applications, like ERP applications, like the DB2-based application, and so on. So again, this is actually a very strong IBM strategy right now to actually integrate those components, those data services on the same level, and open it actually, more actively open it specifically for service-oriented architectures. Let's switch over to slide number 8, and again, it's a slide which also builds up. You have to push at least twice. It shows you again the different components in the information management portfolio, just briefly for you as an overview, just to show you where actually IDS fits in there as a data service in the whole picture, in addition to the other components like content management, like information federation, and so on. So let's switch over to the next slide, which is slide number 10. Now I'm starting with the overview section, and this is actually to give you an overview where we are with IDF and what we can do. And to make it easier for you, I came up with some kind of case studies, because sometimes otherwise it might be too theoretical to talk about the integration, what can we do. So I would like to come really down to a more practical approach and show you some potential case studies here. Let's start with case study number 1, IDS as a web service provider. And let's please switch over to slide number 11 now. In this case, I'm talking about a customer, could be a real customer, I'm not mentioning any names here. In this case, it's an existing customer who would like to get integrated into the overall supply chain management of a worldwide operating retail customer. And in this case, the existing customer is using an IDS7-based application. In this case, it's an order entry system for this smaller manufacturer, which is supplying some certain goods to the retail chain. And how can they get integrated into the overall scenario? That's a very simple solution. In this case, it would be a recommendation to upgrade the existing IDS7 application to IDS10 and use IDS10 as a web service provider. And also, in this case, since the interface for this application is going to be a stored procedure call into IDS10, you're going to utilize IBM's WAF. For those of you who are Trekkies, it's not related to Star Trek in this case. In this case, we're talking about the Web Services Object Runtime Framework. This has been certified and enhanced and tested intensively with IDS10. And this actually comes bundled, or should come bundled with IDS10 actually. If not, you can download it externally, or it comes bundled with some development tools from IBM. In this case, again, WAF gives you easy access through Web Service API to, for example, an IDS stored procedure, or it could be a select statement or an insert statement, anything you would like to open as a web service to the outside, and then easily integrate it into an environment. By the way, I should also note, it also would work with IDS7, but there are some limitations, as you will see later in the more technical section. Okay, there's an overview on slide number 12, so I'm forwarding to slide number 12 now. And what can we actually do to provide web service on top of IDS? And one, I already mentioned the case study. This is IBM WAF. Again, very simple to be used. You can come up with a web service API to IDS in about 5 to 50 minutes, depending on how familiar you will be with WAF. And it also has an integrated runtime environment, test environment. It definitely requires a J2E compliant application server. Since I'm with IBM, I definitely recommend to take a look at WebC application server. But I think the minimum requirement would be something like a Tomcat application server. In addition, we also have other ways and meanings of providing web services. One is definitely IBM's Enterprise Generation Language. For those of you who are developing in 4GL, you might have heard about EGL already, but EGL actually is going to become a very strategic development language for IBM, and EGL is going to be, or actually kind of a new 4GL, so to speak, former 4GL, but it's much more enhanced, Java-based language, and it has a very powerful web service integration for providing web services, consuming web services. We definitely have also strong .NET support to integrate IDS into .NET web services environment for those of you who prefer the Microsoft world for development purposes. And definitely for sure any Java object, anything in the Java world can be normally used as a web service. There might be even some more ways of providing web services, just some of the highlights actually, what you can actually do. Let's switch over to the next case study number two, using IDS as a web service consumer. And then also continue to slide number 14, please. In this case, we have a customer who has an existing legacy application, maybe written in embedded as well for COBOL. Could be also maybe an ODBC written application, anything. In this case, I'm using an ES for COBOL application. And this application should be enhanced to be able to access a credit card verification web service. In this case, what would be the solution? Again, a very simple one, but very powerful one. In this case, use IBM IDS version 10 as a web service consumer. In this case, we're using the extensibility framework of IDS 10 in combination with the Apache Access framework, or Access framework. So in this case, basically, we are wrapping a simple Java stop procedure in IDS 10 around some generated Java code to get access to a remote web service. At this point in time, you actually only have to do a stop procedure call in IDS, something like verify credit card, for example. You provided the credit card information, like the number, the valid date, and so on, and the name, and you're getting something like a true or false, or maybe some additional information returned back from the web service. But it's really on a SQL level, so any kind of informing-based application can use it without any major change, actually. And this makes it really powerful. And let's go to slide number 15. So as I basically said, so we're using the leading extensible architecture of IDS to actually do this kind of stuff. We already have proven and tested this with JFoundation, Java in the server, and some Java frameworks. We're also going to do some testing with some C routines later this year, and also document it later on in the Red Book. But the Java stuff is definitely a good starting point, and also it makes it very easy, very flexible. On the right-hand side, you might see a screenshot, and you'll see later in the more technical session even more detailed screenshots on how to do it. I'm just basically using DB Access, connecting to the source demo database, and just call a function. In this case, actually, I wrote a simple JavaScript procedure to get access to the Google Search API of the Google Search Engine. And you see I'm just doing an execute function call, and I'm getting the results returned back. As soon as I'm doing the execute function call, it reaches out to the remote web service over the internet and getting the results back. And again, this is very powerful to integrate existing legacy informing applications with web services. Okay, let's go to slide number 16. This is the agenda slide. So I'm now moving over to case study number 3. And let's briefly talk about existing Informix 4GL applications and web service integration. Continuing to slide number 17 now. So case study number 3. In this case, we have an Informix ISV. We have hundreds of ISVs, thousands of ISVs worldwide still using Informix. As a side note, we are currently very successful in Germany, by the way, to win back lots of Oracle ISVs back to Informix and generating intensively new reference customers and ISVs right now at the moment. Anyway, so let's go back here to the original topic. So we have an existing ISV, and he wants to add a web service API to an existing Informix 4GL legacy application. And I actually did have some requests coming out from the southern regions here of Europe, I think from Portugal and Spain, and there was a requirement for an existing 4GL application to be web service enhanced. And some of our colleagues from consulting services actually made a very interesting recommendation to write a complex wrapper around the existing 4GL application to offer web services on top of the 4GL application. Eventually, they got in touch with me, and I told them, oh, maybe you should consider to convert your 4GL application over to EGL, and then use the powerful EGL web services APIs. And actually, they're likely proceeding this path. So in this case, the recommendation could be to convert the existing 4GL application to EGL, the Enterprise Generation Language, which I already mentioned earlier. And then just write an additional function in EGL, and this additional function can be then simply used as a web service being provided on an application server, or even also consume existing web service. So again, the conversion path from 4GL to EGL is defined. There are some conversion tools available. So basically, you take your original old 4GL application, convert it into EGL, and then you can go ahead and actually then serve and open web services based on the existing 4GL business logic, because most of the valuable business logic in 4GL can be actually moved into a new modern environment this way. Okay, on slide number 18, I'm more or less summarizing this kind of technology for informing 4GL applications. Again, there might be other ways, maybe also using IDS as a web service consumer to use some store procedure calls instead and keep the existing 4GL applications. But again, you can likely, or I would definitely recommend to take a look at EGL and convert maybe your 4GL application over to EGL. On slide number 19, I just included recently, just as an example, that we are already kind of active in an SOA environment with IDS. A solution as an example, it's just an example from an existing real business partner here in Germany called Retarus. And they actually have a bidirectional interface developed for exchanging business-to-business messages actually in a real world in an SOA environment. So they're able to convert from EDI, XML, and other standards into other standards. And they have been using for a long time Informix already for this kind of purpose. And I actually just stumbled across them just recently. I was kind of surprised, and it's kind of a powerful solution. There's also another proof that they're already very present in this environment. And they have very well-known customers who are using basically in a black box environment IDS for this kind of SOA interface solution. Okay, as a first intermediate summary, so to speak, to just close my overview, before I go ahead with the more technical part, SOA web services allow an easy integration of heterogeneous applications. I think that's the most important fact here. Definitely, I think it should be clear by now, even with the overview so far, that IBM Informix-based applications can be very easily integrated into an existing SOA environment. And IDS 10 and the following releases, like IDS Next and IDS Next Plus, definitely provide a very good foundation for those SOA applications. Even more, you will see in IDS Next, more functionality being realized, which makes it even easier to integrate into an SOA environment. But IDS 10 is definitely a good foundation. As I mentioned, IDSF is already a good starting point, but again, IDS 10 is much better, definitely. And existing legacy applications can be still modernized and can be actually brought into this new environment, which gives you, as a customer and partner, a certain investment protection. Okay, so on slide number 21, just a quick overview again on the summary. Some recommended products for an easy integration of Informix applications. IDS 10 for sure, and again, as I said, IDS Next and Next Plus. Then some extensions, which I'm going to cover more in detail very soon in the upcoming slides. WARF already mentioned, the Web Services Object Runtime Framework, and IBM Rational's EGL. Okay, most of you are likely more interested in the details, so let's zoom over to slide number 22, and actually step further on into slide number 23 now. A little bit more on web services, because again, this is one of the core foundations from a technology point of view for an SOA architecture. Again, there might be different ways of actually integrating SOA environments, but web services are definitely one of the key functionalities here. First of all, web services are self-contained. Basically, on the client side, only a programming language which does know how to handle HTTP, for example, or XML, is required to be able to actually call a web service. Again, as I said, basically all the major languages these days have a way of actually dealing with this kind of interfaces. You can do something like in PHP if you want to. Actually, you can provide a web service in PHP, and this is on one of my earlier slides. But you also can call a web service from PHP if you want. And by the way, there's a very good red book on how to use Informix with PHP, just as a side note. Web services are self-describing. And so the definition of a web service, basically of the web service message format, more or less travels with the message itself. And also the web service description can be downloaded in a certain format if you need to get access to a web service provider, like a business partner. So there's a certain description which actually gives you the information what functions are provided and how to be used. The services are typically modular. So if you combine simple web services, you can really build up very complex applications. And again, this makes it very easy. I already mentioned earlier those kind of Lego blocks. And you can really rearrange those blocks as you need. You can build up a different chain, a different sequence of services, and react on demand on the daily business requirements. That's actually the beauty and the power of using those architectures, really. Let's go to slide number 24. I tried to come up with some kind of categories of web services here. So what kind of categories of web services you typically observe? There might be some more, but I think those are typical representative, so to speak, of web services. So we have business information web services. That could be something like news streams, weather reports, stock quotes, you might subscribe to. Those could be also provided as in a web service API if you want. Business integration. I think I already mentioned those services before in one of my examples, like, for example, providing credit card verification or address validation, for example. Those could be commercial for fee services, which can be used by any other company, by the way, or could be an interface to auction e-marketplaces or so. But I think one of the focus areas or focus categories is definitely business process externalization. In this case, you can really create a global value chain between companies, and so basically companies are using web services to dynamically integrate their processes with each other. So combined manufacturing, assembly, and it could be in different countries. It could be distribution maybe in retail sales in the U.S. and maybe manufacturing in China or in Europe or somewhere else. So it doesn't really matter anymore. So it makes everything very global and very easy to be combined. Let's switch over to slide number 25. Since we're talking about services, we also need to talk about standards. I mentioned we have lots of open standards here, and I'm listing some of them. Let's start with something like a language which actually describes the web service, called the Web Service Description Language, or WSDL. So if you would like to get access to a web service, you initially need to download and need to get access to a WSDL file, which gives you a description of the web service, the function being provided, and so on, how to actually, what kind of parameters are being required, and so on. This is the entry point, typically, if you would like to get access to a web service, to get this description. Or if you're providing a web service, you normally should create such a file and then give it over to your business partner. There are some limited number of protocols being used for communication, like HTTP GET and POST, like the SOAP protocol, which is a simple object access protocol in a web service environment, completely XML-based, by the way. Also different other protocols on networking or transfer protocols, which can be used, like, for example, WebCMQ as a messaging layer. So there's also something like a web service directory protocol. Since we're talking about services, you also need to have something like a yellow pages, so to speak, for web services. For this purpose, you might find some kind of web service directories, and they're using this protocol for this purpose to be able to query those directories and exchange information, update those information. And finally, everything comes down to the foundation of web service. And this is definitely XML. As the extensible markup language. And again, XML has been around for a long time. And you also will, by the way, see some focus around more XML functionalities and technologies around IDS, not just in DB2 Viper, but also in IDS coming up. So there's lots of stuff going on. So the whole functionality is around XML. And I'm also slightly covering some of those existing XML technologies, how we can actually deal with XML and IDS right now as of today. Let's go to slide number 26. This is more like a scenario where you can see the different components playing with each other. So you see down on the right-hand side, for example, web service client. This client normally discovers typically a web service. Maybe it's optional, by the way, using a UDDI directory, which is on the top level, and then retrieves the WSDL, web service description file. And as soon as it has, on the client side, we have written an application, and we're getting access to the actual web service just provided by the web service provider in the middle, who eventually or initially publishes his web service to the UDDI directory. So you get some kind of this kind of complete picture here. how everything plays together with each other. Sorry. Okay, well, let's switch over to slide number 27 now. As an example, I brought you a simple SOAP message. Again, as I said, we're talking about XML here, XML-based messaging. In this case, I'm basically showing you a message which is being sent to a web service provider. In this case, the provider is offering a function called getCustomer. In this case, it's a function on top of the well-known STOS demo database on IDS. And I'm providing just one parameter, which is the customer number, in this case 106. And it's going to return basically the customer details. But again, you might notice it's the whole format actually to do this kind of remote get customer function call. And it also gives you already some kind of an initial glimpse that all the web services stuff, again, dealing with lots of message parsing around XML messages. Which also means that there's some kind of CPU intensive activities going on here. It also means that you really should watch out where you're actually going to implement web services APIs, really. You'll see later on some kind of best practices on web services to avoid any kind of wrong implementation, so to speak. Actually, it's on the next slide, so just move over to slide number 28. So there are some best practices around web services. So I wouldn't use web services between layers of an application. For example, to separate an application between a presentation layer and application layer. Again, the parsing of every web service can be very costly. Okay, you might argue new hardware is coming out, it's getting more and more performance. And IBM just recently introduced the cell processor, which is going to be first released in the game consoles coming out. But anyway, so everything is very costly here, and therefore you shouldn't use normally web services if you're not exposing any external interfaces. Okay, it could be used also in the intranet for sure, in a company, but it should be really, the web service should be only used on the edge of your application server also, to expose external APIs. And if you have a need for example, application separation or so, then you might want to use some different kind of functionalities which are much more performant, I guess, than web services. So really, web services, I would use only web services more, as I mentioned earlier, as an interface between companies or within a company, between departments maybe, to open those APIs in a very open and very easy way. But again, don't use it internally in an application, as long as you have enough CPU cycles available to handle those messaging going around. If you're using web services, if you might be using different kind of protocols or so, then it definitely should be okay. Okay, let's talk briefly about the required Informix foundation technologies on now slide number 29 and continuing over to slide number 30 now. So what kind of technologies can we provide on the IDS level? Because as I said, XML is kind of important for a web service environment. So we have some very powerful RESTful development tools in combination with the WebC application server to be able to generate XML output and be able to shred XML and map it down to database tables. There has been already existing, thank you very much by the way to Jack Roy who wrote this, some kind of XML generating and transformation routines which can be actually integrated into IDS 9 and IDS 10 specifically. The transformation routines, by the way, as part of the XSLT data blade, have been written by Susan Klein. We have the web data blade for XML output. We have some interfaces in our current JDBC driver for validation purposes. You can do full-text searches, unfortunately no XML searches, but full-text searches on XML documents using the Excalibur blade. The spatial data blade is able to generate some XML output, and the WebCMQ data blade, you'll see later on, which comes, by the way, bundled with IDS 10, is also able to integrate you in an SOA environment very easily if you're using WebCMQ as a messaging framework. Let's move over to slide number 31 because it's actually explaining in more detail what's already existing or what can we actually use in combination with IDS. As I said, XML plays a core role for SOA integration and web services. So, again, Jack Roy, my fellow colleagues in the U.S., and now part of the worldwide technical sales team, actually wrote this very powerful routines, and basically some of the XML functionality, and hopefully Jerry is okay if I'm talking about this, which is going to show up in IDF next, is basically based on this technology, but slightly more enhanced. So in this case, you will be able then to generate some XML snippets and part of documents out of IDF very easily. You can even do it as of today by downloading the stuff from the Informs Developer Zone as is. But again, it's going to be become part of IDF next as one of the features. So let's move over to slide number 32. The Web Data Blade has been enhanced in version 4.13 XC2 with some specific tags for generating XML documents, but this is basically just for generating XML stuff. It can be used if you have the need for only very few but very complex and maybe very also flexible XML documents to be generated out of your database and being integrated into a web service environment. In this case, the whole XML templates are stored in IDF, and you basically write templates, for those of you who are familiar with the Web Data Blade, and you have those additional special tags in the Web Data Blade to actually generate XML code. And this, by the way, also is a great companion for the XSLT Data Blade, which has been written by Susan Klein. Actually, I think I've covered it on this next slide, so I'm moving over now to slide number 33. Which brings me to the XSLT data plate. XSLT stands basically for XML transformation. There's a certain standard associated in this case, which allows, because XML, since it's a, typically if you have a well-defined XML document, it's easy actually to convert XML formats from one to another one, for example, which makes also XML a very strong foundation for web services and SRA integration. In this case, utilizing the XSLT stuff from the GNOME XSLT library and provide you with a means of actually converting XML documents directly in IDS, actually bring it very close to the data in IDS to make it very performant. So you have options actually to convert LVARCHARs, character large objects, and HTML, web data blade types from one format to another. Actually, it plays very well together with the web data blade. It also Jack Roy's generating XML generating UDRs. And down there is a simple example on how to use it, and actually you can download it from the AlphaWorks website. Let's move over to slide number 34. For a long time already, the Informis JDBC driver has a built-in API for XML parsing. This can be helpful if you would like to do some XML validation in your Java-based application while writing or reading XML documents from and to the database. In this case, we have some open API. In this case, we already built in some FACS and DOM parsing engines, FACS parsing for doing XML parsing on the fly, basically, and DOM parsing, actually reading a whole XML document into memory, be able to restructure it and then write it down back and modify it the way you want it. In this case, the JAXP API supports all IDF 7 and IDF 10 data types. And again, it can be used in your application and again has been run for a long time. It's a standard, by the way, defined by the Java. On slide number 35, it's basically just for completeness. You definitely can use any kind of text data type in IDF, like character large object, text, LVARCHAR, and so on, to actually store XML documents and fragments. But this is very dumb part is storage of those documents. It's not as good as and powerful definitely as the XML type in DB2 Viper or DB2.9, which gives you much more flexibility and also more power actually in this respect. But if you have a need for a certain specific, let's say, more XML intensive application, you might want to take a look at the DB2.9 if you want to, in addition to IDF maybe for the specific purpose. But as I mentioned, they're also going to get additional XML functionality in IDS throughout the next releases, which likely also going to help you in this respect. Anyway, let's move over to slide number 33. The spatial data blade. As you might have noticed, there's a renewed focus and interest right now on location-based services, and definitely IDS is a strong platform for this kind of purpose, and the spatial blade has been around for a long time. It's basically bundled with the server, comes for free. And you notice there's some functionality built into the spatial plate to allow it to generate some GML or geography markup language fragments, which is, by the way, also based on XML. And again, this can be easily used by using a certain function. I think it's currently based on the GML 2.0 standard, as far as I remember. And by the way, as a side note, one of the upcoming WebSphere RFID server products actually is going to integrate IDS as a core foundation for this purpose. Okay, let's move over to slide number 37, IDS and WebSphere MQ. As I mentioned, we have the choice of different protocols, messaging protocols, which can be used for web services. If you definitely need a reliable framework, you might want to take a look at WebSphere MQ. It's not just because it's an IBM product, but I think it's one of the de facto market leaders in this environment. And to be able to integrate IDS with the WebSphere MQ environment, we are providing, since version XP3 of IDS, complementary WebSphere MQ data plate, which allows you an easy integration actually with WebSphere MQ based infrastructures, and allows you to come up with very powerful applications. It's not very complicated to be used. I even myself, by the way, mastered it eventually for demo purposes. So it only takes an installation of WebSphere MQ and the blade, and then you can go ahead and actually publish information and subscribe information and anything you can do with MQ. Actually, on the next slide, on slide number 38, I have brought with me some examples. We're actually providing two interfaces through the WebSphere MQ data plate. One is the API. The API has been more or less written around or after or modeled around the DB2 WebSphere MQ API. But since also IDS has a very powerful virtual table interface API, we're also providing, which is unique, there's nothing similar existing for DB2, by the way, there's this virtual table interface API, which allows you to actually use pseudo tables in IDS to interface with messages. So if you only have a SQL interface available for your application, you can easily then also interact with message queues by just selecting from pseudo tables or inserting into pseudo tables. In this case, with the VDI example on the slide 38, if I'm inserting into this VDI MQ table, it's actually sending a message to the message queue while it's reading if I'm doing a select statement. Okay, let's move on to slide number 39. Let's get in more details now. I also have to watch out for time a little bit. About IDS, using IDS 10 as a web service provider. So I'm moving on, continuing on to slide number 40. This is more like a recap from one of the earlier slides. So what is actually supported? I already mentioned WARF. I mentioned the ETL-based services and all the other stuff like Java Beam web service and Java-based web services. Again, what's missing here is also the PHP support for web services, which also definitely works with our very good, in the meantime, very good PHP integration for IDS. So let's move on now to the more detailed information here, slide number 41. How to use IDS as a web service provider by using WARF or the Web Services Object Runtime Framework. So this is based on the DADX framework, and I'm going to explain on the next slide what it actually means. It's basically a runtime framework which is reading a specific file in an XML format, and this file is storing information on what kind of procedure needs to be executed, what kind of select statement or insert update statement is being executed during runtime, and this is being read from the WARF runtime framework and then executing eventually some JDBC calls to the underlying IDS 10 environment. And again, there have been some enhancements made, first of all to the JDBC driver from Informix, but also to IDS 10 actually to better integrate WARF for those purposes. Let's move on to slide number 42. So initially the whole stuff had been designed and developed with IBM DB2 and the XML extender for DB2 in mind, but they easily figured out there's also a requirement and need for Informix customers. So in this case, we're using this kind of document access definition extension that's actually the abbreviation, where the abbreviation DADX stands for. And so we have supported functions for querying, selecting, inserting, updating, deleting, and for calling store procedures. And again, as I said, there's only limited support for doing this in IDS 7. You can do it, but you cannot call any store procedure which is returning any results. So there's some limitations here. Okay, let's move on to slide number 43. There's an example actually of one of those files. You might notice again the XML-based format. And somewhere in the middle, you see this, an insert statement. This is just an insert statement, which is eventually being offered as a web service to the outside, in this case an insert statement being offered as a web service. And you only have to write this file down here. And actually, there are some tools in the rational development tools environment which make it easy for you to generate those files. Just define a query interactively and then just say, please generate me just a DADX file. And everything is done automatically for you. And this is being eventually fed into WAF during runtime, and then it knows how to do an insert into the, in this case, customer database. Let's move on to slide number 44. This is the integrated test client, which comes with the WAF environment. It allows you to quickly test your newly created web server on top of IDS. In this case, you see on the left-hand side the provided functions provided by WAF in this case. And you see the insert one customer. I'm clicking on insert one customer on the right-hand side. I see some values being inserted here. I used the name of one of my daughters, and she likes ice cream, so I had to put in some kind of ice cream shop here. Anyway, so I'm inserting this into the customer business source demo database, and you see in the lower window, actually, the result, the web service result from the execution of the web service. This is again an XML formatted message, and it returns me back as a result, if you want to look into detail, something like XSD colon int and then 1, which means I inserted one row and I got this one row inserted result back actually from the underlying IDS 10 version. And this is how those messages can look like in a web service environment, in this case while inserting a row into the IDS database. And again, setting up a web server on WAF is very easy and can be done very quickly. Let's move on to slide number 45. IDS as a web service provider using EGL-based web services. Again, EGL might be known in the community already as a way of upgrading existing 4GL applications into a new environment, but also EGL should be seen as a very powerful language for developing new applications. And this has been also sometimes overseen. And by the way, as a side note, even though I'm not working for the rational brand, I'm part of information management for sure, but I do know that EGL has become product status in the meantime, and you'll see much more activity around EGL as a product, and maybe even activities around standardization of EGL in the market and so on. So you definitely, if you want to come up with a very quick and very powerful maybe web services provider on top of IDS, you might want to take a look at EGL, which by the way also runs with other databases, just in case you need to integrate with other databases too in your environment. And it has some built-in APIs for providing web services and even for consuming web services. So let's move on to slide number 46. And actually, I have a screenshot here brought with me just to show you how few lines of code are actually required in EGL to provide a web service. So you don't have to write a complex Java bean. You just use a procedural language which looks very familiar to most developers these days, I guess. In this case, I just write a function, in this case called getAllCustomers, returning all the customer information from the customer table again. And I'm just using some means and technologies of EGL to get those customers from the underlying promise database by just using getCustomers. Customers, as a side note, the record structure, actually an array of records. And I'm basically returning the number of customers retrieved from the database. That's all I have to do, actually, to return all the customers from the DocDemo customer table as a web service. And you see something like service, customer service here. Otherwise, it would be a program. In this case, I'm saying service as a component, an EGL component. And that's basically it. I have to do something I only have to do to provide a web service. Okay, so let's move on to slide number 47. IDS 10 is a web service consumer. I mentioned this before. Very interesting technology, and let's move on to slide number 48. Actually, a few years ago, our colleagues on the DB2 side really came up and mentioned, oh, we can use DB2 to consume web service. And I said to myself, oh, we have IDS around for a long time with this very leading extensibility architecture. Why should we be able to do this also with IDS very quickly? So I sat down and came up with this kind of model of using J Foundation actually in IDS. This comes to IDS 9. And actually did some additional testing and was able to easily use an existing framework, in this case the Apache Access Framework, which is a SOAP framework, to use this one and actually integrate it into IDS. And in this case, by the way, I only have documented this so far, or we have documented so far based on Java. We're also going to do this very, very soon, I guess, also how to use this in C, if you would like to get better performance maybe or so. So again, I think it really shows the power of IDF, the IDF architecture in this case. And again, it has been around for a long time anyway, so why not use it? And that was my approach, actually, and proved it to our customers. So what is actually required in this case to use IDF 10 as a web service consumer? What are the development steps? Very simple. Step one, you need to obtain the web service description file. Step two, you're going to generate some Java classes using the Access Code Generator. Up to that, this step, you even don't have to have any kind of Java knowledge. Step number three, you have to write a simple Java wrapper UDR, user-defined routine, around this generated code. This requires at least some kind of basic Java knowledge. Step number four, you're going to compile the Java classes and create a jar file. And then you're going to register in step number five those user-defined routines with IDS 10. And eventually, in step number six, you're going to execute it. I also brought with me some kind of more nicer screenshots to illustrate the different steps. So in this case, I obtained the web service description of an existing currency exchange web service, or the currency exchange service WSDL file. There's this kind of bundled code generator with the Access framework, which I'm using in this case. I wrote a small batch program around it. And just use this code generator and provide the WSDL file as the input file. It generates some additional Java files, which I'm compiling down here using the Java compiler. At this time, again, I haven't changed anything. I just did some kind of code generation. So I'm going to switch to slide number 51. I now need to write a simple wrapper UDR, user-defined routine in Java, actually, to actually integrate those kind of functions, generated functions, or classes, into IDS. That's actually what I'm doing here on slide number 51. So I have this function called currency exchange, taking two parameters, string, country 1, country 2, and then calling those generated functions from the Access framework. Again, not too complicated, to be honest with you. On slide number 52, I'm then compiling those wrapper functions of wrapper function using the Java compiler again, and then combining all the already compiled binaries, the class files, and the newly compiled function into one jar file. A jar file is a Java archive, basically something somehow similar to a tar file, but basically combining all the Java classes into one archive, which then can be stored into IDS, which is then being done actually on slide number 53. On the right-hand side, you see a script, simple SQL script, which I'm running through DBAccess to register those Java functions with IDS 10. And I'm actually running it on the left-hand side on the screenshot, and at this point in time, my Java routine in the server, which is getting access to a remote web server, is able, ready to run, which I'm actually going to do on slide number 54. And on the left-hand side, you see this kind of currency exchange function being utilized. So I'm just connecting to the stored demo database using DBAccess, and just calling the currency exchange function with execute function. And that's basically it. Again, it's very simple, and can be, but still very powerful. On the right-hand side, you also see the example you might have seen before with the Google Search API, and I tell you, there are many public web services that you can use. For example, you can also use eBay as an example. They also provide a web service API to integrate, so you can likely query some options or place in some products if you want to, just using internal APIs. So it can be, again, very powerful combined with your own application internally. Okay, so I'm getting very close to the final part of my presentation today. So some additional information, slide number 55, moving on to slide number 56. Since I've covered quite a lot of stuff already today in a short amount of time, I've listed some links which can be helpful for you maybe, like information on IDS 10, information about web integration, the whole generic IBM SOA story and so on, and also the IIUG, which is actually also supporting those events today and so on. Those can be very helpful information here. Let's move on. I'm actually very proud to say, I'm now on slide number 57, that all the topics, or basically the major topics I have talked about today, are going to be covered in a generic information management red book coming out sometimes very soon called Powering SOA with IBM Data Servers. I'm actually proud because it's actually a red book covering all the information management data servers like DB2 for VOS, DB2 UDB, IMS, and so on. And we're going to have a dedicated chapter on IDS. So we're on the same level like the other guys in information management in IBM now. Actually, we also integrated Informix in a kind of a use case scenario in this red book. As a side note, there's going to be some additional IDS red books being written later this year and late summer. And there's going to be an IDS 10 red book. And there's going to be a dedicated IDS SOA section, which will be more detailed than the chapter in this more generic IDS SOA red book coming out. Moving on to slide number 58, there's also an already existing Informix WebSphere red book. Out of date in the meantime, a little bit at least, but it's still valuable. It contains lots of information how to integrate Informix with WebSphere just in case you're going to use the WebSphere environment, but even other also J2E compliant application servers in an SOA environment. And for those of you who have got more hooked on maybe EGL, I definitely urge you to take a look at one of the first EGL related red books which are currently existing, and it's talking about the conversion or transition from 4GL to EGL, and lots of generic EGL chapters in there. Definitely, for those of you who might have the time and the travel expense to travel, definitely I would urge you to take part of the Information on Demand conference this year in Anaheim. It's going to be the biggest information management conference so far, and there's going to be lots of Informix-related sessions, I think more than 75. And also, we are going to have lots of customer sessions also talking about Informix in this respect. And also, there are going to be Informix SOA-related sessions in this conference this year. Okay, I'm now coming to the end, and I would like to thank you for your attention so far. Hopefully, I found the right mixture, and I only had 60 minutes, so I couldn't cover everything in detail. We're going to have, after a quick survey, now we're going to have a question-answer session. But if you might come up with additional questions, feel free to contact me. There's my email address on there. And again, I'm likely going to be in Anaheim anyway, so we can also meet personally if you want to. Again, I say thank you, and lots of greetings here from Munich, Germany, and handing it over to the operator again.
Thank you. At this time, we'll conduct a brief electronic survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by firmly pressing the star key, followed by the number on your touch-tone phone that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signals to reach our equipment. There will be a brief pause between each question to allow everyone a chance to respond. Question one, when does your organization plan to implement an SOA infrastructure? Star one, already in place for most new projects. Star two, already in place for some projects. Star three, within 6 months. Star 4, in 6 to 12 months, and Star 5, longer than 12 months, Star 6, not planned. Again, question 1, when does your organization plan to implement an SOA infrastructure? Star 1, already in place for most new projects, Star 2, already in place for some projects, Star 3, within 6 months, Star 4, in 6 to 12 months, Star 5, longer than 12 months, and Star 6, not planned. Please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to signal. Question 2, the level of technical detail in this presentation was Star 1, about right, Star 2, not technical enough, Star 3, too technical. Again, question 2, the level of technical detail in this presentation was Star 1, about right, Star 2, not technical enough, Star 3, too technical. Question 3. The speaker for this teleconference was star 1 excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, star 4 poor. Again, question 3. The speaker for this teleconference was star 1 excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, star 4 poor. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. Question 4, overall teleconference rating, star 1 excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, star 4 poor. Overall teleconference rating, excellent for star 1, star 2 good, star 3 fair, star 4 poor. And our final question, would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding IDS version 10? Star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Again, would you like someone from IBM to contact you regarding IDS version 10? Star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. And at this time, we will conduct our question and answer session. If you would like to signal for a question, you may do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone phone. Again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone phone to signal for any questions. We will come to you in the order that you signal and take as many questions as time permits. Again, that is star 1 for any questions, and we'll pause momentarily. Our first question will come from V. Yehuda. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yes.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
You mentioned few data blades. You mentioned the spatial data blade, but you didn't mention the geodesic data blade. Is there a reason for that?
Right now, it's my understanding that only the spatial data blade does support GML generation. I need to verify actually in the meantime of maybe the recent version of the geodetic blade is also able to generate GML code. I'm not sure at the moment. I think only the spatial data blade supports it.
Okay. We have a question about performance. When we convert a functionality to be a web service, for example, we want to update the database with updates of thousands per second.
Okay.
Is it possible via web service?
Again, as I mentioned earlier, I think, so you would like to provide a web service or are you planning to consume a web service?
Both.
Both. As I mentioned, every web service message normally requires some additional parsing of XML documents, so there's some kind of overhead you're going to generate. If you can do some kind of bulk updating through a message, it's definitely feasible. I think for every single update, and you have thousands of updates per second, I would assume it's going to slow you down. So I think you might have to think about and come up with a good architecture for this kind of requirement. Again, if you're going to do some bulk updates, you can likely still keep this pace, I think. For singles and updates, you definitely have to take a penalty here, but also depending on the kind of hardware architecture you might be using. It's difficult to tell out of the box because it's also depending on how you're actually going, what kind of framework are you going to use. It's going to be C, C++, or Java, for example. So I couldn't make any serious estimate on the phone right now, to be honest with you.
Okay. And the last question is about security.
Yep.
Can you say something about using web service versus using a communication between in other ways?
Okay, there are some established secure web service standards that you can use. You can also use secure protocols like HTTPS, for example. Initially, the initial web service standard didn't take care actually for security, but in the meantime, there have been established standards. I think if you're going to use, if you require some very high secure ways of for security, you likely need to come down to more proprietary solutions, I guess, in some areas. But I think there are some kind of public established security, secure web services and standards around it which you can likely use. And but I might be able to follow up with you later on and give you some more details if you want to.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
And again, as a reminder to our audience, that is star 1 on your touch-tone phone if you wish to signal for a question at this time, star 1. And at this time, we have no further questions standing by on our question roster. I'd like to turn the conference back to our speakers for any additional or closing comments.
Actually, from my side, I just want to say, again, thank you very much for attending today's conference. And again, if there might, and also for spending the time in the conference today, because I know it's a valuable time for most of you. And again, thank you very much, and have a great day, and see you at the next Chat with the Lab with Informix. Bye-bye.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.
Thank you.